Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy, and we are here to break down week 12 of college baseball. It was quite the strange weekend, I guess I'll say, Joe. There was a lot of bad weather, particularly in the eastern part of the country, and that really messed up a lot of plans on Friday. As we talked about on the preview podcast, there were a lot of teams off for finals, so it's a bit of a lighter slate. But that did not change the fact that we're in a wild college baseball season, and it got wilder this weekend. Kentucky handed Tennessee its first series loss of the season. Significant upset, obviously, there as number one goes down. Oregon State swept arch rival Oregon out west to take control of the Pac-12. Big series win for Arkansas in the SEC West. And the Big 12 got another little shakeup as Oklahoma upset TCU. We're going to get into all of that and more here on today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So, Joe, fun weekend, kind of a weird weekend, but another really exciting weekend around the country.
My big takeaway is that if Mother Nature continues to dominate like this, she's going to mess around and host a regional. Like that's where this is ultimately heading. It's a weird weekend for sure. And we got some interesting results that kind of made it, I think, feel like a busier weekend than it actually was. And I was reminded of just how many teams were off or playing out of conference games or what have you, when I was looking back at the top 25 tracking sheet that you and I work on kind of in the background every weekend. I was kind of reminded of that because there really was quite a bit that ended up happening separate from the weather. And I was also reminded, by the way, of this time of year being the low key downside to the college baseball season happening when it does, because everyone focuses, and rightfully so, on like how cold it is when we start. And this winter, I think in particular, has refused to loosen its grip on a lot of parts of the countries. I've heard that refrain over and over again this season, and I felt it myself. But the low key thing is that when it starts to warm up, it starts to rain. And I think this is the first little glimpse of that we've really gotten on like a large scale this season. But it's a reminder of that's kind of what this sport is in May and June. And so that's not fun, but it is reality. And I have this weird kind of Pavlovian response to it, where when we have kind of rainy weekends like this during the late spring, early summer, or what I think of as the early summer, even though we're not there yet from a technical standpoint, like I'm this Pavlovian response of like, oh, the postseason is coming, because that's just kind of what I associate with it, or rainy days and humid climates and rain delays and things of that sort.
Yeah, it got started on Thursday, and I guess we're just going to dive right into it there. We got a really good indication that this weekend might be a little wacky when on Thursday, a day that there were only like three games, like usually Thursday's always light, but usually there are a few more than three. It was just the one SEC game. Oftentimes the SEC puts two games on Thursday. I guess that was, that there are finals rules in every conference. And I think that's probably why there was only one Thursday night SEC game last week. But there's that. BYU, of course, always plays on Thursday. And then Dixie State was playing on Thursday. That was it. And we still got a crazy, crazy start to the weekend as Kentucky beat Tennessee 3-2 in 13 innings. And that we should have known right then that it was going to be a different weekend of college baseball. And Kentucky built on that series opening victory to go on to hand Tennessee its first series loss of the season. Kentucky held a lead in the eighth inning on Friday when the rain finally became too much and they had to suspend that game till Saturday. They go on to win 5-2 in the resumption. Tennessee does get the finale of that series, which was a seven inning game by SEC rule. But still the Vols go down, lose the series for the first time this season, and do it at Kentucky of all places. Tennessee has played in these, high profile series. They've played at Vanderbilt. They went to Oxford. They did all these things that at the time, were
high, high profile series. And, you know, this one was maybe their lowest profile series, except for maybe when they played Mizzou at home. But even that was, you know, Tennessee on this winning streak and their SEC winning streak and all the rest of that. This weekend, it just did not really register that Tennessee at Kentucky was going to be a series that we were all kind of locked into in the early part of the weekend. But that's where it happened. Kentucky gets a massive series win as they try and get into the NCAA tournament. They have a narrow path now, but a path certainly exists for them. So huge for the Wildcats. But on the flip side, obviously, the story is kind of just number one losing and doing so on the road against Kentucky.
Yeah, you know, we don't spend a lot of time on this podcast, like really talking about the machinations of our top 25 discussions, although it might be a decent time as we go through this conversation to talk a little bit about kind of our thoughts on splitting the hairs of one versus two this week with Oregon State and Tennessee, because I know there's probably some Tennessee people listening who have heard us talk and maybe explicitly say on this podcast, although you and I both forget what we've said on podcast, what we've said off air, what we've just said to other people, what we've written, all that stuff. I know I've definitely thought it before, like they could lose a series and still be number one. And that obviously didn't happen. So that's something we could talk about as we go on this conversation.
And we should. I hate talking about the top 25, but that thought is definitely out there. It's pretty pervasive right now. So we will take some time here in a little bit to address why that thought just previously may have been true, but just isn't true right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a worthwhile conversation, and you know, Tennessee fans, I think in this case deserve to hear the rationale, because if for no other reason than to kind of really just give you a window into like, we really, you know, agonized over it. And that maybe that's a little bit too strong a word, because it's just college baseball rankings. Like, we shouldn't be agonizing over, but we really spent a lot of time on this last night and struggled hard with it and changed our minds three or four different times probably. So that was tough. Anyway, back on the stuff on the field, it is kind of one of their lower wattage series this season, really, since they've gotten going. And I kind of think that's what it was always going to be if they tripped up like this. Now, I wouldn't have expected it to be Kentucky, just because I frankly just didn't think Kentucky was going to be good enough to pull it off, right? I thought Tennessee could play their B or C or even D game and maybe win this series. But this, I felt like this is kind of what it would look like eventually when Tennessee would take that step back, right? It's on the road, so you don't have that, you know, that home crowd kind of helping you, you know, pull yourself up.
Although there were a lot of Tennessee fans in attendance. Tony Vitello talked about it after the series, just how many fans they had there at Kentucky Proud Park.
And very visible for the finale, like right behind home plate, a bunch of them. But it's on the road. The weather sucks. Like, the weather was as bad there as it was anywhere else. Every time I turned it on, like, it felt like there was a film on the camera, but it wasn't that. It was just because there was, you know, rain coming down, so it was harder to see like the action. So the weather sucked. There was like very little atmosphere, even on Thursday, which I guess was the day in which the weather was best. Like, the crowds weren't massive. So there was like very little atmosphere, it seemed like. So there wasn't that energy, because even like antagonistic negative energy when you're on the road, especially for a team like Tennessee that thrives on that kind of thing, even on the road, that can buoy you. They didn't get any of that. And the offense went quiet. And I feel like that's always kind of what it was going to look like, is the offense would have a bad weekend. They are not able to feed off emotion. Like, there's a lot of reasons it's just not going well, and that's how they lose a series. And here it is. And again, I wouldn't have guessed it'd been Kentucky, but I feel like this is at least stereotypically what we assumed it would look like when this happened.
Yeah, the offense was really the issue here, and credit to Kentucky pitching for getting it done. But they kind of got Tennessee out of their game. Tennessee, you know, takes a lot of really quality at bats. That's kind of their thing. Like, everyone talks about the home runs, and that is certainly Tennessee's thing as well. But more than anything, I feel like it's about the depth of the lineup, how consistently they take good quality at bats. And that just didn't happen this weekend. And some of that absolutely credit goes to Kentucky pitchers for that. Some of that probably goes a little bit to the weather. And some of that also probably goes to the fact that it wasn't happening for Tennessee. And as that doesn't happen, particularly after you lose game one, if it continues to be a struggle, it becomes more natural that you would press. And especially for a team that, is running with the expectations, the weight, they haven't been in this kind of situation hardly at all this year. They'd only lost one series opener. I guess two, they did lose in Houston in game one, but they just hadn't been playing from behind much this season at all. And that's what they were trying to do here this weekend. The offense still clicks at a really high level when it really clicks. But for the last few weeks, it seems like they have been contained a little bit better, but nothing like this weekend when, they were held to two runs in the first two games of the series. And, I don't think it has to be anything more than a hiccup. I don't know that Kentucky rewrote like the book on Tennessee. I think Tennessee is very well aware of what they were doing, what wasn't working for them. So they just need to get back to being who they are. And, I have pretty high confidence that they'll be able to do that. But, you do have to say a lot about what Kentucky's pitching was able to do, particularly Tyler Guilfoyle on Thursday, who, is Kentucky's relief ace and came out of the bullpen for six scoreless, held Tennessee to one hit and gave Kentucky the opportunity to finally break through against Tennessee's own really talented pitching for that 3-2 win.
Yeah, in part because of Guilfoyle's outing, I saw this stat in a piece by Mike Wilson, Knoxville News. He was there over the weekend that Tennessee in Thursday night's game went one for their last 42, and that's that's probably not going to get it done. Just gonna put it a fine point on it that way. But between that and not hitting a home run the first two games, like those kind of really stand out as the numbers that hammer it home. And if you're looking for positives, Tennessee still pitched well enough to win. Chase Dolander returned, looked pretty good. So, they can afford games like this. These just kind of got away from them a little bit, not got away from them in terms of like getting blown out, but just like slipped away. They still pitched well enough to win. And I think one of the interesting things coming out of it is, again, shouts to Mike Wilson. I saw a Redmond Walsh quote in that piece where Walsh said, look, we lost two in a row this weekend. If we do that if we do that in the postseason, it's over. And like, that was kind of interesting to me because it does really hammer home that if this kind of thing happens in the postseason against good teams in June, like that's it for them. And the teams they're going to be facing in the postseason are going to be every bit, even in a regional, are going to be every bit as good as Kentucky and probably better. And so that, for a team that, they're not ignorant. They're not dumb. They don't have their heads in the sand. Like they know they have to play better, but it does really hammer home the fact of how fleeting life can be in the postseason, even for a team that's played as well as they have all year.
I mean, look no further than Arkansas. Indeed. That obviously was, they didn't lose all season. And then all of a sudden, after winning a game by like 20 runs in the game one of super regionals, they lose back-to-back games and they don't even get to go to Omaha. It's a strange sport. And yeah, it's like things come at you fast there in June in the postseason. On Kentucky here, Kentucky came into the weekend fighting to just make it to Hoover. The top 12 teams in the SEC make it to the SEC tournament. They were fighting for just to be the 11th or 12th team in that field in a few weeks down there. They're still in that fight. This week I did not just suddenly lift them comfortably into the field for Hoover, but it did mean that they have a little bit of room there to breathe. I think that they're in the field as of today. I would have to break down some tiebreakers, but they now also, beyond just looking at like, all right, well, let's just get to Hoover and then figure it out from there. They can look at a real path to regionals without needing to, really roll through and win the SEC tournament or something. They're now 9-15 in the SEC. Their RPI is 58. They're 26 and 21 overall. None of that is good enough. They're going to need to finish strong, but they have series wins now against TCU, Georgia, and Tennessee. Those teams are all projected regional teams. They're two of them are projected as hosts. TCU is the one that's not, but TCU might finish second in the Big 12. Those are three loud series wins for their resume. And while the metrics right now aren't good enough, they have this series coming up at South Carolina. If they can win that, then they finish against Auburn. They'll play somebody good in the SEC tournament. Your metrics can turn around quickly in the SEC. And again, they have these three really big ticket items on their tournament resume. They're setting up for what could be a really interesting resume. Now they have to go out and build on this at South Carolina. They cannot lose that series. They lose that series, it's probably all over. But Kentucky has, with this series win, opened a legitimate path to regionals, which they have not reached since 2017.
Yeah, it's a narrow one, like you mentioned. I mean, they probably need results the next two weekends. And they do have...
Well, I'm open to the idea that like they don't need to win the series against Auburn. I am open to the idea that if they swept South Carolina and then lost to Auburn going 4-2, at that point you're 13-17, and then you win on Tuesday in the SEC tournament, I'm open to the idea that that is enough. But like, so I'm now asking them to sweep an SEC road series. So like, maybe it's easier to just beat Auburn at home.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is like asking them to, that's, I'm assuming like a 2 out of 3 against South Carolina. Yeah, I mean, yes, if they sweep and then lose the series. Yeah, I mean, I think we're saying the same thing, though. It's like getting to 13 wins.
Yes, yes. They need at least 4 more wins and probably 5, including the SEC tournament.
Yeah, yeah. So it's super narrow, but you're right. I mean, it's right there. And they need to get to at least 13 wins, and they have to hope, and playing Auburn will help, but they have to hope the RPI makes a move, because 13 wins tends to get you there if your RPI is closer to 30 something as opposed to 40 something. So we'll see. But yeah, kudos to them, because I think, you know, it should be celebrated that we're sitting here really parsing it out. But, you know, this was a team that felt, you know, felt like they were just on the wrong side of it, especially because they'd missed opportunities against teams like Ole Miss, who's turned out to be not very good, and Missouri, who is not particularly good, and they lost those series. So it felt like
they played like they had 4 or 5 straight rubber games and just weren't able to win them. And, you know, yeah, things would be so much different for them if they had just won 1 or 2 of those. But yeah, they had been close. They'd been in all these series, but they hadn't won. They'd only won one other SEC series this season, and that was Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really gotten run off the field since the series against Arkansas, which was first weekend of SEC play. So yeah, they've been right there, and perhaps they're hitting their stride, and they're going to need to get there, frankly.
All right. So I guess we can insert our top 25 discussion in here. We're going to start talking about Oregon State here in a second, who is the new number one team in the Baseball America top 25. They swept Oregon over the last week. They played 4 times. 3 of them counted for Pac-12 play there in Corvallis. They swept that. They also beat them on Tuesday. Oregon State jumped from number 2 to number 1 in the top 25. As Joe mentioned, we agonized about it. I think both of us flip-flopped like 3 times in that conversation last night. These teams are incredibly close. And, you know, there is this idea out there, and like, look, we probably played into it, that Tennessee was just so far ahead of the pack that they could withstand a series loss. Now, I will say about that, nobody expected their series loss was going to come against one of the teams that is potentially going to miss the SEC tournament. Like, I know I just said what I said about Kentucky and how they have a path to regionals. They also have a very clear path to missing the SEC tournament. This is a team that, you know, is not, but they didn't just lose to Auburn. Okay. They lost to Kentucky. And so that should be said, that, you know, they have now not the worst series loss that they could have, or anything terrible. It's a road SEC series. These are all difficult series, but it's also not the same as Oregon State's one series loss, which is against Stanford, a team that is in the top 10 that is in the mix to host regionals that is second place in the Pac-12. Like that, so that's a significant factor. And then the other thing is, I don't think anybody really was paying enough attention to how tight Oregon State was really closing the gap. Oregon State is number two in RPI. That gap has tightened significantly. And a big part of that was that Tennessee just took this, a tough series loss, and Oregon State just picked up four really big wins against a quality team in Oregon. That tightened the gap. Oregon State has played what is judged by the official NCAA metric to be a harder schedule. Their strength of schedule is 22 to Tennessee's 39. Their non-conference resume is like infinitely better than Tennessee. I don't really care that much about that. You know, Tennessee plays in the SEC. I'm not looking for them to, you know, go out and try incredibly hard in non-conference. I don't care about that. But it should be noted that Oregon State did really challenge itself in the non-conference, and that's why its strength of schedule is better, despite the fact that Tennessee plays in the SEC and Oregon State plays in the Pac-12, which is a good conference, but not rated as highly as the SEC. Oregon State has played away from home more often and better. And this is one of the bigger things to me. Tennessee, yeah, it has a better record. It is 42-6 versus 38-9 for Oregon State. That's pretty marginal, but it is better, unquestionably. They have 12 wins against teams RPI 151 plus. Oregon State only has three of those. So again, that all just goes into the Tennessee schedule a little on the light side relative to Oregon State. We're talking about teams that are winning the Pac-12 and the SEC. Like, we're really splitting hairs here, and I'm really splitting hairs to make this Oregon State argument. Sure. But that's what we have to do here. I can't, in this top 25, Joe, I don't know how many people realize this, but there can't be two number one teams in the top 25. We have to pick one. And so as much as I would like to just say, they're both number one, like, we did have to make a decision. And ultimately, Oregon State, the way that they're playing right now is a factor, and the overall strength of their schedule is a factor.
It's a little like an underreported fact that you have to have a number one. You can't have two. So I'm glad you brought that to the fore.
There can only be one.
Indeed. Sometimes you have to split hairs. Like, sometimes we say, oh, we're really splitting hairs here. But like, that is when you're splitting hairs, you have to make difficult decisions that, like, you could just as easily, someone could come here and make the defense of Tennessee. And depending on who you are, like, you could be swayed by that. And I'm not here to tell you you'd be wrong, right? I mean, you can make an argument for both of these teams. You can make an argument against both of these teams. I don't think you're going to be wrong in either case. I won't muddy the waters because you laid out the argument for Oregon State versus Tennessee pretty well. And I really don't want to muddy the waters because you did it pretty clearly. I mean, the other thing is that Oregon State seems to be playing really well at this point. You know, Tennessee has clearly slowed down a little bit. So that's a factor. And also, let's be honest, like, just the idea of Oregon State having swept a rival, you know, the way they did, they're 5-0 against them. By the way, they have wins against a top 10 Gonzaga team as well. When a team loses at number one, loses a series, and the team behind them swept a good team like that, like, the poll mechanics suggest most of the time you make that switch. Now, this is a special case, and that's not something I want to just live by in every case, right? Like, I don't want to just by default have to move teams around because of results. But that's another thing when it really boils down to it. Like, you know, you made a great point about, you know, when a number one team wins a series, we don't think twice about leaving them at number one, no matter how good or bad the opponent is, no matter how impressive or not they did in winning the series. If the number one team in the country wins a series, we don't give a second thought to just penciling them back in at number one. So unless we're willing to kind of do that week to week and think about overtaking the number one team in the country based on all those kinds of things, and maybe we should, by the way, but in week 12 of the regular season, if we're not willing to do that moving forward, like, the team that lost should probably move down and the team that won should probably move up in this scenario, given, you know, everything that we've talked about.
I wish we spent more time analyzing the number one on a week to week basis. And sometimes I do try and, you know, look at it more deeply, but there is just an autopilot of like, oh, they won. And, you know, that gets us into different issues, but like there is just a something about like how you're playing right this second. This isn't power rankings. You know, we're not trying to do this on who is playing best right this second, but it's also a subjective ranking. And like, that does map, you know, how you're doing lately, you know, that plays into this. If you don't want it to play into your rankings, just look at RPI. The computers cannot think about that. But if you are a human evaluating this, like, I think it's impossible not to be swayed by the most recent result. And in this case, that was Oregon State looking amazing and Tennessee, you know, scuffling on the road against one of the bottom end teams in the SEC. So that's where we landed on it. Maybe it'll be different next week. That's the beauty of this. Things change. And also, by the way, if you don't like it, like, remember, the NCAA tournament committee doesn't care about this either. So, yeah. You know, they're looking at RPI. They're not looking at our rankings. They're not looking at any other human rankings. They're looking at RPI exclusively.
Yeah. Like I was going to say, like, I don't want to undercut our entire exercise or the importance of rankings, but like, you know,
you've been listening to this podcast for like 25 minutes now. I think it's okay. We can let out the secret.
Yeah. Like these teams will be in the NCAA tournament in like 3 weeks and they're either going to like move on or not. Right. I mean, like, these teams are the two best teams in college baseball right now. And like, yes, I understand why you'd want your team to be number one, but ultimately, like, this late in the season, they're just bigger. Certainly the people actually in the program, but also just in general, like at this point, we're now kind of pointing towards bigger, more important things on the docket.
Yes. Final thing here before we get into Oregon State is that when we project the field of 64 on Wednesday, Tennessee is going to be the number one overall seed. And frankly, is that not what you care about? Oh, maybe you don't want to be the number one overall seed. So, you know, it's a thought. Nobody's won it as the number one overall seed since 99. So food for thought. All right, let's get into this Oregon State sweep, Joe. The Beavers, their pitching staff did a really good job this weekend against a strong Oregon offense. We talked coming into this series about how these were the top two offenses in the Pac-12. And neither pitching staff was able to completely silence the other offense. The Saturday game was offensive as Oregon State won 8-7, but otherwise the Ducks had no answers for Oregon State pitchers this season. They played five times. They have not been able to get much of anything going there. And the Ducks have been outscored this season by the Beavers 23-8 in five games. So that's a pretty strong statement by Oregon State. I think that, you know, they were particularly motivated to kind of make that statement after last year losing to the Ducks in the season series. This year, they leave no doubt. And I mean, this team, if you're not watching Oregon State on a weekly basis and like understandable considering the Pac-12 network situation and everything, we don't need to detail here, but this is a team that has the highest scoring offense in the Pac-12 at 7.77 runs per game. They're in top 10 nationally in team ERA, 3.52, and they lead the nation fielding at 989. They've got probably the best pitcher in the country in Cooper Jerpy. They've got in Jacob Melton, another likely potential first round pick. I mean, it's a really complete team. It's a really good team. And that was what was on display this weekend in Corvallis.
Yeah, like I don't want to give them a short shrift by not having like some really insightful take here, but like, to me, it just stands out that this weekend, they just really without much drama. I mean, Saturday's game was close, but like wasn't in many ways. I mean, I think Oregon, I don't have the box scores up, but I think Oregon maybe scored late in the ninth inning there, maybe to make it closer, some such. Anyway, it just really wasn't that close a series ultimately. And look, I mean, they scored enough. Cooper Jerpy was great. The bullpen was really good. I think Jake Finnegs, great news on Sunday with the fact that he's getting back up to full strength now. He threw five innings, looked really, really strong. That's good news for them moving forward. They made one error in 27 innings. I mean, it was just comprehensive. Like, there's no other way to put it. There was no real drama. They took care of business. You know, could we nitpick and say like, well, you know, they didn't really take advantage of Oregon's pitching staff the way they thought we could have, right? I mean, Oregon didn't get great starting pitching, but their bullpen was able to do some things. And so like, if we really want to nitpick here, but that's what it would be, is nitpicking, because otherwise this was just a really comprehensive series sweep and there's no other way to put it.
Oregon cleaned that up on Saturday, did score two in the ninth to make that a one run game. Oregon State able to hold off the comeback attempt there. Oregon pitching, obviously we've talked about how, you know, that staff is not the healthiest. They're just not, they're not where they want it to be, in an ideal world. And they walked like 11 batters on Friday. And, you know, I'm sure that Oregon State would have liked to get more than five runs in a game where they drew 11 walks. But, you know, at the same time, they just controlled all these games. And, you know, it wasn't their loudest offensive showing, but it was just a really solid weekend. And that's what Oregon State has been doing since they lost their series to Stanford at the start of April. They're 17-2. They just have put their head down and gone about their business. And, you know, they're in first place in the Pac-12 by three games. They're streaking towards another Pac-12 title. And I mean, it just, everything about this team is clicking right now. And, you know, if you look at the overall body of work, this is a team that went 5-0 against Oregon, a team that's not in the top 25, but you know, if we ranked to 30, would probably be there somewhere. They're 3-1 against Gonzaga, a team that's now into the top 10. They've been the good teams on their schedule with the exception of one hiccup against Stanford. And, I am so impressed by what Oregon State has been. I knew this team was going to be good coming into this year, but for them to be as good as they are in all facets, and you know, they don't have their ideal pitching staff either right now. And, you know, Fenix coming back is a big deal. His five innings was the most he has thrown since, opening weekend. And he looked great doing it. And if they're going to roll out a rotation of Chirpeek, Mats, and Fenix rolling going forward, I mean, that's really scary. And that's a team that can absolutely contend and go win a national championship.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like they made a couple of statements there. One is that they have clearly separated themselves in the Pac-12 in terms of the number of games, yes, but also just in terms of quality. No shots at Stanford, but there's just a difference there. And, it also, they, I mean, obviously, because we have them ranked number one, but we had talked, you know, last week about, you know, is Oregon State closer to Tennessee or closer to the field? And like, we know that answer now. We know which side they're closer to. So it's two teams at the top now that kind of have separated themselves as opposed to just one. And that's the power of what Oregon State did this weekend, because it couldn't have been much more impressive.
Briefly on Oregon, how concerned are you? This is a team that's now 13-11 in the pack, five games off the pace. They're in fifth. Their RPI is really strong. I don't think they're in danger of missing the tournament, but they're 2-8 in their last 10 games. Things just have not been trending in the right direction for them. And now 2-8, but five of those eight losses are against the Beavers. So like, I don't know if Oregon has a problem or if they just have an Oregon State problem.
Yeah. I think it might just be the latter, honestly. You mentioned they're probably not in danger really of missing the NCAA tournament. I'm with you there. And I think how well they play once they get into a regional is going to be pretty matchup dependent. You know, if they can get into an offensive regional where it's just going to be a situation where the last at bat wins, then I think they've got a pretty good shot because they can win games that way. But if they're getting in a situation where they're going to have to win, you know, have to get it done against elite pitching or, you know, win some close low scoring games, I think that's going to be where they'll be in a little bit more trouble. So I think it's a team that can do some, they've proven time and time again this year that things don't have to go perfect for them to win. But I think that's going to depend on what they see in regionals to whether or not they can get that done in the postseason.
They're not locked into Spokane in part because Spokane is not locked into hosting. But yeah, I think Oregon would be quite happy to not go to Gonzaga if Gonzaga does end up hosting it. Try their luck somewhere else. I also think they'll just be happy to be done with the Beavers for now. I mean, we'll see if they play in the Pac-12 tournament. But these last couple weeks have been tough for Oregon trying to play the Beavers here. All right, so we're going to move on here. We still want to get back into the SEC to talk about Arkansas and Auburn, and we got to talk about that Big 12 title race shakeup. So we're going to do all of that and more here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, Joe, let's move on. Let's go back to the SEC. There was a top 25 matchup in the SEC West as Auburn hosted Arkansas. And the Hogs just got it done again. I think Joe and I are a little bit both just kind of in awe of the way Arkansas keeps just finding a way. This is a team that, you know, is leading the SEC West now, has a pretty commanding lead at this point. And they keep going about their business. And this weekend, they didn't get an amazing start from Connor Nolan. He's been a big part of what they've done all season long. And he was fine, but like it wasn't, Auburn was able to get to him in a way that a lot of other teams haven't. Didn't matter. Arkansas came back and scored a bunch of runs and won that game. Auburn wins on Saturday, forces a rubber game. And, you know, you feel good about Auburn on Sundays with Joseph Gonzalez going. And again, didn't matter. Arkansas just went out and did their thing and won a tough road series. And, you know, we talked coming into this weekend about how the spotlight was going to be on Arkansas a little more this weekend. And how are they going to respond to this tough road environment? And the answer was they just went out. They did their thing. They won another series. They're in first place in the SEC West. Their RPI got a nice little boost from that. And they are tracking towards another SEC West title.
Yeah, it's I mean, that's a skill. I'm convinced more and more the longer I do this, I'm convinced there is a skill to being able to just kind of win games when things don't go well and shape shift, try to win games different ways. I do think there is an inherent skill in that. Some teams seem to have it, some teams don't. In Arkansas this year, but just generally. Last year, obviously, they were just so good, but in most years, they just tend to be kind of one of those teams. And so I do think there is something to that. I think there are a couple of interesting things to kind of add on to all the things we've said about Arkansas all year. I mean, one is that this team does seem fairly comfortable trying to win bullpen games. You know, and last year, that was a real issue if it didn't involve Kevin Copps. And most games involved Kevin Copps, but you know, if you got past that, there was a real question about what they were going to get. I think this team's a little more comfortable with that, or is a little more willing to do that, or has been pushed into doing that. However, it's happened. I think there's that. I also think there was a few things in the lineup that I took as positives this weekend. You know, Robert Moore has really been scuffling this season. He has not followed up his first season with the season he would have liked to have had this year. He was an impact player this weekend. I think that's a big deal. Jace Borofin has been battling injury. He was out for about a month earlier this season, and right before he went down with injury, he was heating up. They're also playing him quite a bit. I think they trust him, or at least want to be able to put trust in him. He swung the bat well this weekend. Kendall Diggs is a guy who's been like a bit player so far, but they seem to be inserting him more and more into the lineup to see what he's got. He hit a walk-off home run against Ole Miss. He had, you know, I think 4 hits in 3 games this weekend. So, you know, if you're looking for some positives here and some growth in this lineup or growth in this team, I do think you can look at a few individual cases in the lineup and start to see some positives there for maybe a situation where this lineup maybe isn't quite so top heavy as it has been for most of this season.
We also brought up the idea that Jackson Wiggins, you know, had been on a bit of a short leash lately. And I feel like he pitched pretty well on Sunday. He gave them what they needed. They got some good pitching outside of Noland. And, you know, I'm not concerned about Connor Noland. I'm not concerned about anyone having a bad start against Auburn, really. I mean, that offense is really good. And, you know, it'll happen. But I thought Wiggins coming in and pitching well on Sunday was a really nice sign for Arkansas as well. And yeah, I mean, the thing about Robert Moore is definitely true. He went out and hit a big homer in that comeback on Friday. And it just kind of seemed like he kept rolling for him and kept rolling for that offense overall. I mean, it's, you know, it's still not the best offense in the country, but it does seem like they found a little bit more form this weekend. And maybe some of that was playing in an offensive environment in Auburn. Who knows, but it does seem like they're trending in the right direction at the plate. And that's obviously a really good thing for Arkansas and a really bad thing for anyone that's going to be matched up with the Hogs the rest of the season. On Auburn, really tough 2 weeks. Knew it was always going to be hard. They go 2-4 at Tennessee and then home to Arkansas. We talked last week about how they weren't going to want any sort of moral victory and they just need the wins and all the rest of that. But again, you know, in a tough series against Arkansas, I thought Auburn acquitted itself well. I don't know, you know, it's top 8 seed hopes are they're rockier from here on out. They're still certainly there, but they're going to have to work pretty hard for it at this point. But you know, regardless, this is a team that is dangerous and has shown that they can play with anyone in the country. You know, right now they're maybe a little bit short on the mound, and I think we've seen that over the last 2 weeks, but they're, you know, they're plenty good enough to make some noise in June.
Yeah. I think I heard on the broadcast at some point that Blake Burkhalter would have been available. It didn't really have a moment for him, I guess. So like maybe they are going to get a little bit healthier on the mound, at least in terms of the bullpen. And, you know, the Nationals, the top 8 seed, stuff, it gets a little dicier. It's still a team that's in a position to host, and that's the big picture thing here. Going 2-4 is more or less what you expect when you're facing basically two top 5 teams. I think Arkansas's at 6, but you know, point being, it's two very, very, the two toughest teams they could have possibly played in SEC play back to back weeks, and they handled it okay. Five, okay, yeah, two top 5 teams. There you go. The last 2 weekends, they've got Alabama and Kentucky, and you know, I guess we've seen Kentucky play spoiler, and we just talked about that path having to maybe go through getting a result against Auburn. But, you know, Auburn's looking at it and seeing Alabama and Kentucky and SEC play left. If they take care of business there, they're going to be, you know, playing games at home on the plains in June. And that's a huge deal. And this was, while they would have liked to have gotten a result either of the previous 2 weekends, they did what they needed to do. You know, if you want to host in the SEC, one of the keys is the teams that are better than you just don't get swept. And they're right there doing exactly that.
All right. So that's the SEC West. I guess briefly before we leave the SEC West, A&M won its series against South Carolina. That was harder than expected. And LSU went out and won its series against Alabama. And you know, right now, RPI suggests that A&M is in the worst shape of any of the SEC West teams to host. That's a bit of a surprise to me, as I had kind of thought they were tracking towards hosting, and now maybe LSU has jumped them in the pecking order. It's possible all 4 of those teams still host, but it was a much more difficult weekend than I think A&M would have liked against South Carolina, but they do get the series win at home, and that is absolutely the name of the game this time of the season. All right, we're going to head to the Big 12, staying in the state of Texas, as Oklahoma traveled to TCU. And, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about TCU over the last, couple of weeks since they went out and they upset Oklahoma State and moved into first place in the Big 12. And then last week they went and got swept in two games at Florida State, come back home, back in a Big 12 play, still in control of their own destiny in the Big 12 race. And they went on Friday night against Oklahoma without Riley Cornelio, who was out with an injury. Austin Krobe replaced him in the rotation, did not get a great start out of Austin Krobe. But no matter, they won. And then Oklahoma came back and won the next two games, looked very good offensively in doing so. And the upshot of all of that is that TCU now has fallen out of, fallen behind Oklahoma State in the Big 12 race. Really, pretty much that their hopes are very much riding on somebody giving them some help now. They're going to need help to win the Big 12. And Oklahoma got a series win that they really needed to improve their chances. We kind of had them as a bubble team for the last, really throughout the entire season, had Oklahoma as a bubble team. This is the kind of series that takes Oklahoma off the bubble. They still have to go out and they have to finish, but I am no longer going to be projecting Oklahoma as one of the last four teams into the field or anything close to it. They're looking quite good coming off of a really nice series win in Fort Worth.
Yeah, previously, Oklahoma was on what I like to call the take care of business, don't get swept plan, which is where you, and this is the thing, by the way, like this is not just silliness, like it's, in major conferences, to just be an at-large team, all you really need to do is just make sure you win the series against the teams you should beat, occasionally toss in a sweep against a team that's really struggling, and then against the teams that are on paper better than you, just don't get swept. And like, that's precisely what they've done. They haven't been swept in any of the series against the, the other good teams in the Big 12. And whenever they've had a series against a team they should beat, whether that's Baylor or Kansas State, they've taken care of business. And this was the one, this was kind of the game. So that was probably going to get them in if they'd have lost this series, but then, won a series against West Virginia and then lost a series against Texas Tech. Like, they probably get in as a bubble team, but it's a little dicier. This, to your point, kind of changes that calculus. They feel safely in now. So that was raised the ceiling for this Oklahoma team. Obviously, they're into the top 25 as well. So big series win. You can't overstate it there. Still a team that's kind of looking for answers on the mound, but maybe they're finding some. As Jake Bennett has backslid a little bit, Chaz Martinez like piggybacked with David Sandlin in this series. It didn't go great in this particular instance, but that's kind of an interesting thing. Cade Horton got a start on Sunday. By the way, the other Big 12 team in the state of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, started Trevor Martin on Sunday. So that's kind of interesting, the symmetry there with teams turning starts over to guys who had been relievers. And so that's kind of an interesting thing there. So maybe that's an answer if Cade Horton can stretch out. Certainly it worked on Sunday in a small sample, obviously. So perhaps that's something there. The offense has been good all season. It appears to be maybe getting a little bit better as they're hitting their strides. Certainly they're swinging it better than when I saw them early in the season, when it was really just one or two guys, Blake Robertson and Peyton Graham, really doing a lot of the heavy lifting. That has gotten better. So it's a good team. Like, it was a team when I saw them in Houston, I was not overly positive about this team in general and their postseason hopes, but they've been better than I expect them to be. And it's, at this point, I think it's just a good team.
I think that's a really good point. Joe and I both saw Oklahoma in the first 3 weeks of the season, and neither one of us walked away very impressed. I saw, Sandlin was good against Arizona. And then Arizona ultimately got to him. And at the time it felt like Arizona was like one of the best offenses in the country. And since then that has not really borne itself out, but, I liked what I saw from him. Their offense though, just wasn't really clicking. And, they knew they were short on the mound at the time. Cade Horton was not able to pitch yet, but they knew he was going to get back soon. And, it just wasn't there. And then Joe saw them a couple of weeks later, still a lot of the same problems. They have gotten a lot better as a team. And I think that's a credit to them for finding some answers, both to the players and to that coaching staff. Horton is an intriguing prospect as a, put this as a literal prospect, but also as a starter going down the stretch here. I'll be curious to see what that looks like moving forward as he gets more reps in that role, if that is what they're going to continue to do. And, finding more offense outside of Payne Graham has been kind of the key this whole season long. And it does kind of feel like they're finally hitting their stride in that respect. This is a solid TCU pitching staff, even without Cornelio. And Oklahoma was able to get a bunch of runs on them and Lupton. And some of that was that TCU was very wild on Saturday, although I think TCU coach Kirk Sarlous would maybe suggest they were getting squeezed a little bit. I don't know. I just watched that replay last night, and Kirk was not happy with the way that game was getting umpired, I don't think. But still, Oklahoma went out and they got it done. The way that they're playing right now has been very impressive, and they're certainly tracking towards an NCAA tournament appearance. And it's been a little while since the Sooners have done that. It's been since 2018. So, good job for them to go out and win the series. And in doing so, though, they are kind of throwing the Big 12 title to their in-state rivals there, as Oklahoma State very much in the driver's seat now. The Pokes were not playing a conference series this weekend. They're playing Southeast Missouri State. They look great in doing so against a team that's atop the OVC standings. Big series this weekend, Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. And actually, Oklahoma State is now in a position where it can clinch the Big 12 this week. It's an incredibly narrow path. They need to sweep Texas Tech for starters, but they are now in a position where they can really be eyeing the Big 12 title for the first time since 2014.
Yeah, Oklahoma State sitting on the sidelines last weekend as far as conference play goes, and they benefited greatly. So sometimes, sometimes that helps. And, TCU, we've talked about it time and again, like they're running out of time to make a move because they're out of conference the last weekend of the season. So another interesting wrinkle there. And boy, does, TCU going 5-1 against Texas Tech and Oklahoma State wasn't that long ago. And boy, it feels like a while ago. The last 2 weeks just haven't gone as well. They've obviously got a few things happening on the mound. Cornelio got skipped. They put Austin Krobe there. It didn't go particularly well for Austin Krobe, who's still very much kind of working his way back. They started Caleb Bolden on Sunday rather than Brett Walker, who's been their regular Sunday guy. We've kind of talked about Brett Walker and kind of the good and the bad of having him in your rotation. Caleb Bolden is a little bit of the same thing, I think, in some ways. So they're really kind of fighting it in that regard. And I kind of went back and looked, and it's just a team that's really the key for them is what do they get on the mound? Because they don't, you kind of look at their schedule this season and they don't win a lot of games where they have to really scrap and win games 11-9. And nobody likes to win those games that way. Like there's not anybody that's really looking to win that way. There are teams that do it well. But they just don't, they haven't won a lot of games like that. They've won some games 8-5 or 7-4, things like that, but they're not winning a lot of those really ugly 13-12 rock fights. So they really do need to kind of keep opposing offenses in check, or at least that's been their track record so far this season.
Yeah, I think that is that's definitely been the case. And their offense doesn't really stand out as being, that doesn't feel like it should be the best part of that team. It's been solid, but not great. And I think that's a part of it. TCU now, we had them projected as a host last week. That's over, I think. I think they were going to need, unless they go out and they win the Big 12 tournament in Arlington, I think that they needed, their RPI just has never matched where they've really been. And if you really parse their resume, it's a little light. With the exception of that Oklahoma State series win. And so I think it's pretty much over for them in that regard. And we'll see if the Big 12 can get a second host even. I kind of don't think it will. And that's kind of crazy given the way that the Big 12 seems to be. We think highly of several of these teams, but unless Texas is going to close really well, because they still have an RPI worthy of hosting, but Texas Tech doesn't. Playing three games at Stillwater will help this weekend, but Texas Tech doesn't have an RPI to host right now. TCU doesn't. Oklahoma doesn't. Like, it's an interesting evaluation of where that conference is. And I don't really know how to make sense of what our eyes and subjective feelings about these teams are versus the what the RPI is saying. But what the RPI is saying is that Oklahoma State right now is going to be the number three overall seed, and they aren't going to have another host. So that's just kind of a interesting, strange situation that the Big 12 is dealing with this season.
Yeah, I mean, there's interesting on the back end too. We talked about this offline yesterday. I think Texas Tech's RPI problem will take care of itself if it wins the games we expect it to win. But like, they're sitting closer to 50 than they are 40. And, you know, the track record of teams in a conference like the Big 12 getting a bid with an RPI, I mean, maybe they would give a little benefit of the doubt to Kansas or Kansas State, maybe, but generally speaking, the Big 12, you're not getting a lot of help if your RPI is not in what we would, top 40, top 45 range. And so, you know, Texas Tech really, they've felt so solidly in the field all season. And now we kind of look up and it's like, well, they can't really mess around. I think they're going to get there, but they really don't have as much margin for error as you would think.
No, I put them as a number three seed last week for the first time. And let's say that didn't go over so great with some of their fans. But it's there for them not to be, but it's also there for them to be. So yeah, they're not in a position where they have a ton of leeway here. And big series coming up this weekend in Stillwater for them. Okay, Joe, let's go to the ACC. This was a very strange weekend in the ACC because so many teams were off or playing weird non-conference quick weekends because of finals. Virginia was off. Virginia Tech only played Villanova twice, and Notre Dame was off. And but still, we had Miami was out of conference. We had some notable things happen here. One was that Georgia Tech went out and got swept at Clemson, and that was A, stunning, and B, really significant for Clemson's at-large hopes, and C, a backbreaker for Georgia Tech's hosting hopes. So that happened. UNC won a series at NC State. They take the Tobacco Road rivalry series. That's a really big deal for UNC's at-large hopes and NC State's hosting hopes. Those were the two big things that happened. You know, Wake split a series with Louisville because they tied on Sunday due to a travel curfew. Still a pretty strong week for Louisville overall when you throw in the fact that they won at Vanderbilt on Tuesday. That was a big RPI week for Louisville, and they're in position to be a top eight seed now potentially. And they've got a really big series coming up against Virginia Tech. So we're not going to talk too much about Louisville here because we're going to take care of that on Thursday. But Joe, between what happened at Georgia Tech, and Clemson and what happened there in Raleigh, what stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the competing, those two series, the competing North Carolina and Clemson resumes, that it strikes me that it doesn't look like maybe Duke is going to end up making the run that we thought they could make. But outside of BC this year,
it's over in the for ACC, Duke. I'm sorry to say they lost to Pitt this weekend.
Fair. Everyone has had a run, like everyone's going to get a shot here at this thing. And that's the ACC very giving, very kind of them to let everyone get their chance here. But yeah, Clemson has one of the weird resumes too. I mean, they're a little like extreme Texas where, Texas has that RPI where it's like, this team could host if they get it together. Clemson's not there, but I mean, their RPI is in the top 20. I mean, they're in a situation where they probably don't have to win quite as many conference games as some other teams would because that RPI is going to be so high. They're going to get some benefit of the doubt if their RPI is top 25 or something. So those two things stood out to me. It kind of keeps those paths open. Those two teams, Carolina and Clemson, were probably one more series loss away from it being curtains for them, almost certainly. And so now they're back kind of in that, back in that mix, and making a run, which this is the ACC. I think we kind of knew that you can't really write teams off in this conference. And for Georgia Tech, it's, it's kind of more of the same. Like, this is just a team you can just set your watch to, kind of the disappointing losses and the surprising series wins. And this team just kind of is what it is. So while I was pretty shocked that it was a sweep from Clemson, the idea that they would lose that series was not altogether all that shocking to me, I guess.
Clemson is playing at Virginia this weekend. They really cannot afford to get swept. And I note that because like that's a thing that happens to Clemson. They went to Louisville 2 weeks ago and got swept. Like, so they cannot let that happen. They got swept at Notre Dame. Like they just don't play super well on the road. They need to go out to Charlottesville and find a way to win at least one game. And then they have Boston College at home on the final weekend of the season. BC is going to, BC's already, I think, been eliminated from ACC tournament contention. BC is going to be on the beach by then. And so, I mean, you've got to, I almost never say you got to sweep series. You got to sweep that series. Those have to be three wins. So at that point, if they don't just don't get swept this weekend at Virginia, sweep BC, that is 13 ACC wins, which normally is not good enough. But Clemson has five SEC wins to add on to that. And their strength of schedule is 10. You noted they have a top 20 RPI. Like that is a resume that gets an SEC team into the tournament. We have not seen a ton of ACC teams follow that standpoint or that path, but Clemson may well do it this year. And I am very fascinated to watch them try and figure this out over the last 2 weeks. I mean, and that doesn't even count what may or may not happen in Charlotte. And because of the way the ACC tournament runs the pool system, it's a little convoluted how easily it would be for Clemson to advance to the semifinals short of just winning two games there. But big, big week for Clemson. Georgia Tech now also low-key kind of in trouble. They're 12-15. They have the number one strength of schedule in the country. Their resume is just more like Clemson than you might realize. And they are maybe the, you know, the Rutgers men's basketball of college baseball this year. If you pay attention to college basketball this year, Rutgers got a lot of attention for having some amazing wins and some terrible losses. And that's basically where Georgia Tech is at. They can beat anyone, it feels like, but they also can lose to anyone. And they have done both of those things. And I, you know, if Georgia Tech gets into your regional as a three seed, like, man, I would not be excited about that because they're certainly good enough to win any regional. They're also capable of going 0-2. So who knows? UNC talked about it, just had not played well on the road this weekend, took advantage of the fact that they were on the road, but it was a short road trip, and they go out and they get it done. They're in intriguing shape as well. The ACC just, it's a hodgepodge right now. Any given week, it feels like something can happen, and usually it does.
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously had, it's been helped this year. You know how last year we talked about, you know, at least we have kind of Notre Dame to cling to, and because the rest of the ACC felt mediocre. And this year, you know, you could point to maybe Virginia Tech or Miami has outperformed expectations and things like that. But, you know, the idea that we have, you know, still have teams that like should, I shouldn't say should, but teams that we thought were just dead in the water 3 weeks ago, making these kinds of runs. And the fact that we've got teams with, really glaring weaknesses, whether you want to point at, you know, Florida State and the fact that if they don't get elite pitching, like they really struggle, or Louisville, which is they've kind of got to score a bunch of runs to beat you because they really can't trust their pitching week to week. Or, you know, Virginia doesn't seem to play all that well away from home. And, you know, it's, you know, rotation in particular is slipping a little bit. Like there are these teams that have really glaring weaknesses that are just kind of continuing on in the ACC and are going to be hosting regionals and might be top eight seeds and all that. I want to celebrate them, but also I do think there is a little bit of, again, indictment of the ACC being more mediocre than anything else.
Okay. So having talked about some bad losses here in the ACC, let's go out west and talk about two more bad ones. Joe, Arizona lost a series to Southern Cal. That's last place in the Pac-12 Southern Cal, which is a weird statement and maybe worth some more time some other day, but last place in the Pac-12 Southern Cal beat Arizona. The Trojans are so weird. They have series wins against UCLA and Arizona, whatever. Arizona, another bad series loss. And UCLA had a just abysmal week, going 0-4, losing to Long Beach on Tuesday in extra innings and then getting swept at Washington over the weekend. Neither did good things to their RPI. Both of those results are part of the reason why Oregon State took such a commanding lead in the Pac-12. UCLA's RPI suggests it's in serious bubble issue right now. I just don't know how true that is. The West Coast does get some benefit of the doubt. Like, I assume UCLA is going to recover this and finish well, but margin for error is now starting to be eliminated out there. Arizona's in much better shape RPI wise, but like also just, you know, we've talked about it before. This is a team that has taken some bad series losses, and here was another one.
Yeah, I mean, it's becoming increasing. This league reminds me of the Big 12, the other 12 league, in that Oregon State, much like Oklahoma State, has established itself, and it's kind of anyone's guess about anything else. The one difference here is that I think Stanford is somewhere in between those things, where I don't know if Stanford is closer to the pack here or closer to Oregon State. I'm guessing closer to the pack right now, because Stanford does have this kind of tendency to lose games it shouldn't this season, or at least on paper shouldn't. So that's kind of the way I lean there, but yeah, it's a league that's, that just hasn't really established, outside of Oregon State, has not really had anyone establish themselves as, yes, we are a national title contender. I mean, Stanford has had his moments. It's still a top 10 team. We thought that about Arizona coming into the year. That has not come to fruition. We thought, you know, UCLA is crazy talented, but also crazy young. And I think the results this season have reflected that. And, you know, the big what if, I think some of this is Oregon, just because they've had some injury issues on the mound. They fought through them. We just got done talking about them a little while ago. But their RPI suggests, like, this was a team that if things had gone a little bit better and have not been quite so rocky, like, it's a team that maybe should have hosted and could have been a top 8 seed. And when you can do those things, like, it opens up a path for you to be a team competing for a national title. So I think there's an alternate history here that Oregon is maybe that team we're talking about here, but it just hasn't been in the cards. And of course, going 0-5 against Oregon State is going to draw a stark contrast there. But it certainly just feels like it's been an uninspiring year, I think, in the Pac-12. And you know, there have been 5 teams in regionals, pretty much all solidly in regionals to this point, and like no one else really even in the mix. And that kind of continues on. And so it's taken a lot of focus away from the conference outside of talking about how good Oregon State is.
All right, a couple really impressive pitching things I want to touch on here before we get out. First happened on Sunday, Long Beach State's Jerron Watts Brown threw a no-hitter against UC Riverside. He struck out 16, walked 1. That was the only blemish he faced, 1 above the minimum. And stunningly, that's the first time Long Beach State, incredible history, incredible pitching throughout its history, it's the first solo no-hitter in program history. So congratulations to Jerron Watts Brown there. And then on Friday night, East Carolina was playing Memphis. CJ Mayhew for the Pirates threw 9 hitless. He walked 1, faced 1 above the minimum in those 9 innings. And Landon Gartman for Memphis threw 8 hitless. He struck out 10 and walked 4. That game went into extra innings, so CJ Mayhew does not get a no-hitter, but he gets a no-hitter in his heart, and I think everyone else's.
Yeah, sorry about that little technical snafu there, but I dropped my what's the word, Teddy? The
pop filter again?
The pop filter. Yes, thank you. I was struggling for my words there. I dropped my pop filter. I have to kind of manually hold it up in front of the microphone, and slid down on me. But yes, in my heart, certainly a no-hitter for CJ Mayhew, a guy who has really been nails for ECU throughout his time there. So really a wild game, and that one was one on Friday that, you know, in a Friday that didn't give us a lot else in many cases, was an interesting little thing. But it kind of snuck up on, I didn't even notice that game was doing what it was doing until they were in the 13th inning, frankly. So snuck under the radar there. And the Long Beach thing is kind of surprising. I don't know what that bum Jared Weaver was doing when he was at Long Beach, but I guess it was not throwing no hitters.
What is up?
Yeah.
I mean, they have a ton of big leaguers. Can't throw a no hitter. Can't mix one in somewhere. But
let's go Jason Vargas.
Yeah. What are we doing here? So in a really just strange, disappointing season for Long Beach State. Jerron Watts Brown is a freshman, so that is a bright note for the future. Quickly on ECU now, they definitely have snuck up on me a little bit here. They're up to 30-18. They're into the top 40 in RPI. They have a two-game lead on Houston in the American. We've kind of been talking about the American as a one-bid league. And you know, the way ECU has played here, the way they've kind of run through the conference yet again, means that if what happened last year and that they trip up in the American tournament, I think, you know, they still have to finish these 2 weeks well, but they are trending towards, you know, in a position where if it happens again this year, they'll get in. They won't host, obviously. We're not talking about that, but they'll get in. And, you know, the American could be a two-bid league that way. And it does seem like that's going to have to be the way it has to be, because I've been bullish on Tulane at various times. Their RPI just continues to not get where it needs to be, in part because they're just 10-8 in this conference. And Houston has an RPI of 78. That's not getting it done. So if you're looking at the American, it is it's looking good for ECU, not so good for anyone else to be an at-large team.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, they really have kind of flown that under the radar, and given some of the stuff they dealt with even way back in the preseason with, you know, Carson Wisenhunt going down, and it's a team that got swept by Bryant, which is a team that turned out to not be good, you know? So really kind of a stealth thing for the Pirates to get back into. You know, Pirates often do like to come in under the, you know, the dark of night to not be seen. So it's no surprise, I guess, this is the way these Pirates have done it. And, you know, that's the mark of one of the many marks of a program that kind of expects to win and does all those things is like, this is a team that didn't fold up and they've kind of continued winning. And like, it's clearly not a classic version of ECU baseball, but it's one that's good enough to be in the mix for the postseason. And I think there's definitely something to be said for that.
Certainly another team that you're not going to be excited about seeing in your regional if you do get drawn with ECU. They even made it on the top 25 sheet officially this week. So, you know, maybe look for ECU to get back in the rankings here in the next couple of weeks. All righty, that's going to do it for us today here on the Baseball America College podcast. We covered a lot of ground. There's even more ground you can cover over at baseballamerica.com. You have the full top 25 and Joe's, you know, analysis of each of what the teams did over the last week in the top 25. You can read off the bat my analysis of the weekend that was around college baseball, and there's plenty more to come throughout the week. We will be back here on Thursday to preview week 13 of college baseball. I mentioned top 10 showdown, Virginia Tech and Louisville, Miami and Florida State, a couple big ACC series. There's that one in the Big 12 with Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. It really is a fun weekend. It's one versus two, I think. Still, it's one versus two in Conference USA with UTSA and Southern Miss. There's a lot going on. We'll have a lot of fun getting into that on Thursday. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, follow, rate, review, anything you can do. It's a great time of year. We're coming at you twice a week throughout the regular season. So hopefully you are subscribed already. And if not, still time to rectify that. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. And the fun continues over there as well. All right. So we'll be back here on Thursday. Another big weekend of college baseball is on tap. We'll dive into that then. Thank you all for listening to this episode. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.